In your outpatient primary care clinic, you see a 24-year-old woman who has been experiencing nausea and epigastric pain that improves with meals for several weeks. She tells you that she has taken over-the-counter antacids like Tums. But while the pain improves briefly after taking Tums, her stomach pain has not resolved. Although she does not regularly take NSAIDs, you want to investigate if perhaps she has a peptic ulcer due to other causes. What tests should you order next to investigate this patient's case? How do we determine the cause of her epigastric pain? And welcome to Audio Bricks. I'm Yoon Weisholt, here to bring gastrointestinal bricks to your ears. After our episode today, you will be able to 1. Define peptic ulcer disease, or PUD, and know its most important risk factors. 2. Describe the morphologic and pathogenic features of Helicobacter pylori, especially the histology of gastric lesions it causes. 3. Describe the typical clinical presentation of PUD and the tests used to make a diagnosis. 4. Explain the most common treatment strategies for PUD. 5. List the potential adverse outcomes of untreated PUD. And finally, 6. Explain gastrinoma and Zollinger-Ellison syndrome as a cause of PUD. Part 1. What is peptic ulcer disease? Have you ever run over a pothole on the road? Those little defects can have a big impact on your car and your driving experience. Peptic ulcers are shallow potholes that develop in the gastrointestinal lining. In peptic ulcer disease, or PUD, painful sores develop, most commonly in the lining of the stomach, duodenum, or both. PUD arises when there is an imbalance between protective factors, like the mucosal barrier, and damaging factors, like excess hydrochloric acid. How does PUD differ from gastritis? Well, gastritis describes inflammation of the stomach lining, which can be acute or chronic. With gastritis, the submucosa are not harmed, and the muscular stomach wall remains intact. In contrast, there is ulceration through the mucosa into underlying tissue in PUD, which can reach into the submucosa and muscular layer. This may cause perforation and bleeding. Chronic gastritis can be a predisposing factor, but it is not required to diagnose PUD. What I would like to do today is for us to take a ride through understanding peptic ulcer disease, because this is one of the most common disorders you will encounter as a physician. In fact, it affects 4.6 million people annually in the United States, with an estimated 10% who will have a duodenal ulcer at some time. So let's get our seatbelts on and try to avoid those potholes during our audio adventure. But first, let's see if you remember the first key point we just learned. How does peptic ulcer disease differ from gastritis? Gastritis describes stomach lining inflammation without damaging submucosa or mucosa. PUD presents with ulceration through the mucosa, submucosa, and muscular layers. When considering the common causes and risk factors for PUD, you might immediately think of stress and spicy food, but in fact, the most common cause of PUD is infection with H. pylori, a type of bacteria. The routine use or overuse of non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs, or NSAIDs, is the second most common cause. With the increasing size of the aging population in the United States, peptic ulcers due to NSAIDs use are on the rise. However, note that a rare condition known as Zollinger-Ellison syndrome can also cause PUD, but it is not commonly seen in the clinical setting. In addition to regular NSAID use, other risk factors include age older than 50 years, smoking, and alcohol use. Regular alcohol consumption increases risk because it can erode stomach mucosa and increase the amount of acid produced. Now, quick quiz. What is the most common cause of peptic ulcer disease? H. pylori infection is the most common cause of PUD. Part 2. How does H. pylori cause PUD? Now, I'm going to have to convince you that stress and spicy foods are not the most common causes of stomach and duodenal ulcers. In fact, it's H. pylori, a gram-negative, curved, rod-shaped bacterium with a flagellum. H. pylori has been shown to be a cause of peptic ulcers, chronic gastritis, gastric cancer, and gastric mucosa-associated lymphoid tissue, or MALT, lymphoma. PUD caused by H. pylori most commonly presents with ulceration of the duodenum, but ulcers may also present in the stomach. Now, how exactly does a tiny bacterium cause ulceration? This is like asking how a drop of water can cause a pothole. When water enters the ground under the pavement and freezes, it expands and can cause cracking of the pavement, leading to gaps on the paved road. Similarly, when H. pylori gets into a person's gastrointestinal tract, it produces toxins that weaken the protective mucosa, allowing stomach acid to penetrate into the tissue beneath. PUD is also a tale of bacteria's ability to use our own immune system against us. H. pylori is antigenic and will trigger an inflammatory response. This inflammatory response is driven by interleukin 8, which recruits host immune cells. To survive in the stomach and the duodenum, H. pylori begins to produce an enzyme called urease, which hydrolyzes urea into ammonium carbonate, a base. This increases the pH of the environment, effectively neutralizing the acidity of the stomach and allowing H. pylori to survive. The bacteria live in or on the gastric mucosa and do not invade the tissue below. Let's now test what you've just learned about H. pylori. What does H. pylori secrete in order to neutralize stomach acidity? The answer is urease. Part 3. How does peptic ulcer disease present? The most common symptom of PUD is dyspepsia, or indigestion. Patients will present with abdominal pain or discomfort, usually in the epigastric region and left upper quadrant. Now, it's important to know the different presentations of gastric versus duodenal ulcers, so let's take some time to compare and contrast these two types. Patients with gastric or stomach ulcers may experience pain immediately after eating due to acid secretion, and such pain may improve with fasting. In contrast, patients with duodenal ulcers have pain that may decrease with meals, or the pain can improve right after eating. These patients may also experience pain in the middle of the night. It is theorized that the pain occurs at night because of circadian stimulation of hydrochloric acid secretion. In both types of PUD, less common symptoms include bloating, nausea, vomiting, blood in the stool, loss of appetite, and weight loss. It's important to point out that the type of bleeding we're talking about here is most commonly occult blood, which is blood in the stool that is undetectable by eye. When it gets worse, it'll turn into melena. You won't see bright red blood in stool because the PUDs cause upper GI bleeds. Because such bleeds may go undetected or untreated from an ulcer, anemia can develop over time. Now let's see if you remember the key differences in presentation of gastric versus duodenal PUD. How does pain present in gastric ulcers compared to duodenal ulcers? Gastric ulcers cause pain that increases with meals, but improves with fasting. Duodenal ulcers cause pain that decreases with meals. Part 4. How is PUD diagnosed? The most commonly used diagnostic tool for PUD is endoscopy, specifically esophagogastroduodenoscopy. That's quite a mouthful, so we'll just call it EGD. To perform an EGD, the patient is sedated, and a camera is inserted into the mouth and passed through the esophagus and stomach and into the small intestines. This allows visualization and identification of ulcers, and a tissue biopsy may be done. Such ulcers appear as small wells, usually less than 2 centimeters in diameter, with a clean base surrounded by erythematous mucosa. You may see blood vessels in the ulcer base. Although endoscopy is the most commonly used method for diagnosing PUD, CT can also be used to visualize ulcers. However, CT is done less frequently because this type of imaging exposes patients to radiation and is not as sensitive or specific. If an ulcer is detected via endoscopy, the next step is to test for the presence of H. pylori. Remember this little bacterium that is popping up everywhere as we learn about PUD? Here it is again! Testing for H. pylori can be done in a variety of ways, including a urea breath test, stool antigen assay, and urease testing of biopsy tissue obtained via EGD. First, the urea breath test involves having a patient orally ingest a tablet, capsule, or liquid containing urea labeled with radioactive carbon. H. pylori converts urea into ammonia and carbon dioxide, and the carbon dioxide is exhaled and measured. Detected isotope labeled carbon dioxide will indicate the presence of H. pylori. A stool test looks for antigens produced by live H. pylori bacteria that are shed into the stool. In urease testing performed on biopsy tissues, a pH-sensitive reagent, usually phenol red, is used to detect pH changes in the gastric mucosa caused by urease. Phenol red changes color from yellow to red as pH increases. A specimen will test positive for H. pylori when it turns red because of the breakdown of urea to ammonium carbonate. Organisms are also visualized on biopsy. What is the diagnostic method of choice for peptic ulcer disease? EGD is the preferred diagnostic method for PUD because it allows visualization, identification, and biopsy of the ulcer. Part 5. How is peptic ulcer disease treated? With potholes, you can't just keep repaving the road. You won't prevent further breakdowns unless you address the cause. This perspective is also the key to treatment for peptic ulcer disease. Patients with NSAID-induced ulcers are advised to stop NSAID use, and a proton pump inhibitor, or PPI, is prescribed. PPIs such as omeprazole and pantoprazole are first-line therapies for peptic ulcers. They work at the stomach border, inhibiting the secretion of hydrogen ions into the gastric lumen through the hydrogen-potassium ATPase, or proton pump. This results in a less acidic environment, allowing the damaged gastric tissue to heal. But what do you do when a patient's PPI treatment is ineffective? You can consider then giving a histamine 2 receptor antagonist. These medications block H2 receptors on gastric parietal cells, thus decreasing gastric acid secretion. H. pylori-induced PUD is slightly more difficult to treat. Remember to treat the cause of the problem. Because H. pylori is a bacterial infection, you'll need an antibiotic regimen. On top of the antibiotics, you would then add a PPI. Therefore, the classical treatment has been triple therapy for 14 days, and this triple therapy includes clarithromycin, amoxicillin, and a PPI. Note that for patients with penicillin allergies, metronidazole can be used in place of amoxicillin. Recent American College of Gastroenterology guidelines recommend that most patients may benefit from quadruple therapy, which is bismuth, metronidazole, tetracycline, and a PPI for 10 to 14 days. After therapy is completed, patients must be retested to determine if the H. pylori infection has been cleared. Now let's review. What is the classic triple therapy used to treat H. pylori infection? Triple therapy includes amoxicillin, clarithromycin, and a PPI. Part 6. What complications can arise from PUD? Remember the road we've been traveling on all this time? Well, if we don't take care of it, its condition only deteriorates. If there are cracks and potholes on this road, it only gets worse if it goes untreated. Compare our road trip to the progression of peptic ulcer disease. Untreated PUD can get worse, and its main complications include perforation, gastrointestinal bleeding, and obstruction. How do perforations occur as a PUD complication? Well, remember that ulcers can create a hole in the wall of the stomach or duodenum. If the ulceration goes deep enough over time, it will become a perforation through the gastrointestinal lining. Patients with a perforation will present with acute, sharp abdominal pain, often paired with a ridged abdomen and tachycardia. Because perforation can lead to air passage into the peritoneum, an upright chest x-ray will show free air under the diaphragm. A CT scan may also be used for diagnosis. Patients with a perforated ulcer are also at risk for bacterial peritonitis. A perforated ulcer is treated initially with an intravenous PPI, antibiotics, and surgery. How do peptic ulcers lead to gastrointestinal bleeding? Ulcers can erode blood vessels, so most ulcer bleeding is just capillary oozing through a hole in the gastric mucosa. The gastroduodenal artery, which runs behind the first part of the duodenum, is commonly injured by erosion from an ulcer. Slow blood loss results in anemia over time, and severe bleeding may become a medical emergency. Symptoms of severe blood loss include black or bloody vomit or stools. Bleeding ulcers are treated with IV fluids, blood transfusion, PPI, and endoscopic therapy to stop the bleed. A small number of patients may require surgical treatment. What about gastric outlet obstruction? Ulcers can cause obstruction with repeated bouts of inflammation, fibrosis, and scarring. This is especially common with a duodenal ulcer close to the pylorus. Patients typically present with nausea and vomiting, abdominal pain, and weight loss. On physical exam, the obstruction can be diagnosed by listening for a gastric splash. In other words, the stethoscope is placed near the xiphoid process and the patient is rocked from left to right. A splashing or sloshing sound will be heard if gastric contents are retained several hours after eating. The initial management of a gastric outlet obstruction focuses on fluid and electrolyte repletion and stomach decompression with a nasogastric tube. Now, to see if you are paying attention, what are the main complications associated with peptic ulcer disease? Perforation, gastrointestinal bleeding, and gastric outlet obstruction. Part 7. What is Zollinger-Ellison syndrome? So far, we've learned about the key features and presentation of patients with PUD, as well as how H. pylori causes ulcers and how it can be treated. But before we end today's episode, I do want to make a small tangent and talk about Zollinger-Ellison syndrome, or ZES, which is another cause of PUD. Remember that ZES is a rare condition caused by gastrin-secreting tumors known as gastrinomas. These tumors arise most often in the pancreas and duodenum, and more than 60% are malignant. Gastrinomas secrete excessive amounts of gastrin, lowering the pH and breaking down mucosa in the duodenum, jejunum, and ileum. As a result, patients with ZES have multiple chronic ulcers that do not completely respond to standard therapy. One key feature of ZES that distinguishes it from more commonly occurring PUDs is that ZES patients often present with diarrhea. Diarrhea results from the inactivation of pancreatic enzymes by the highly acidic environment. Pancreatic enzymes break down fats, proteins, and starch in the gastrointestinal tract. When these enzymes are inactivated, the result is increased intraluminal osmolality, which draws water into the gastric lumen, leading to diarrhea. The diarrhea also occurs because high gastrin concentrations inhibit small bowel absorption of sodium and water. In some patients, chronic diarrhea may be their only symptom, not actually ulcers. Other symptoms include abdominal pain or discomfort, acid reflux, nausea, vomiting, bleeding, and weight loss. Okay, I don't want to dwell too long on ZES, but know that it's a disease that presents with multiple gastric ulcers. And before moving on, what distinguishing symptom is found in patients with ZES in addition to just ulcers? The answer is diarrhea. And that's all I have on peptic ulcer disease. Let's see if we've completed our goals for this episode. First, can you identify the typical clinical presentation of peptic ulcer disease? The cardinal symptom of PUD is abdominal pain. Other symptoms include bloating, nausea, vomiting, blood in the stool, loss of appetite, and weight loss. Second, can you name the common causes of PUD? The most common cause of peptic ulcer disease are H. pylori infection and routine use or overuse of NSAIDs. H. pylori is a gram-negative, curved, rod-shaped bacterium with a flagellum. Zollinger-Ellison syndrome, or ZES, is also a cause of PUD, but it typically presents with diarrhea. In ZES, gastrinomas produce excess gastrin, leading to increased environmental acidity and ulceration. Next, can you describe how PUD is diagnosed? PUD is diagnosed by endoscopy or CT, with endoscopy being far more common. H. pylori infection can be verified using the urea breath test, stool antigen assay, or urease testing of a biopsied specimen. Finally, can you describe how PUD is treated and its potential complications? Treatment of NSAID-induced PUD includes stopping NSAIDs and using a PPI. H. pylori infection is usually treated using triple therapy. After treatment, patients must be retested to ensure eradication because of the increased risk of gastric cancer associated with H. pylori. Complications of PUD include perforation, gastrointestinal bleeding, and gastric outlet obstruction. Now that we've covered the basics of PUD, let's revisit our patient from earlier to see if we can determine her diagnosis and prognosis. If you recall, you recently saw a 24-year-old woman who presented with several weeks of nausea and epigastric pain that improves after eating. Over-the-counter meds like Tums has not helped, and she does not regularly take NSAIDs. You send her for an upper GI endoscopy. What additional tests would you request in your workup of the patient? Based on these results, what treatment options are there for her? Your patient's symptoms trigger you to think about peptic ulcer disease, especially of an ulcer in her duodenum. This is because she presents not only with nausea and gastric pain, but her pain improves after meals. You remember that the most common cause of PUD is NSAIDs, but since she does not regularly take such medications, you consider other causes of ulcers, such as an H. pylori infection. While you await the endoscopy results, you also order a rapid H. pylori urease breath test and regular blood work. Her urease breath test returns positive. Her endoscopy reveals the presence of a small duodenal ulcer, and biopsy from two sites shows colonization with H. pylori. Based on these results, you make a diagnosis of H. pylori infection as a cause of a duodenal ulcer. Luckily, her blood work is normal, showing no anemia, which you would be worried about, because ulcers can cause occult blood loss. When you meet your patient at a follow-up appointment, you explain the findings of her lab results and that she needs to start on triple therapy. She is surprised that antibiotics are required as part of her treatment for a peptic ulcer, so you explain that the two antibiotics used in the triple therapy, amoxicillin and clarithromycin, are to combat the H. pylori bacteria. The third medication you prescribe her is omeprazole, a PPI. You explain to her how important it is that she take these three medications consistently for 14 days. Your patient leaves with a positive outlook that her ulcer is treatable with medications, and you arrange for a follow-up appointment in 1 month to retest for H. pylori to ensure that her infection is cleared. And that's our show for today. Make sure to like and subscribe. Your feedback continuously helps us to improve. You can get the full RxBricks experience online at www.usmle-rx.com, complete with illustrations, study questions, flashcards, and active learning. Happy studying, and see you next time.